Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Gimel Amud Aleph, four lines down. We ended off the Gemara. Rava came and basically instituted a new concept with regards to Gittin. Eino Chanami, there is a concept of onus with regards to Gittin. That means that if there's an unforeseen circumstance in which a person finds themselves and therefore they cannot carry out the Tanai, therefore the get would either be effective or ineffective, depending on how the Tanai was set up. But because of these two genre of women who basically would be caught, captured, or ruined by that uncertainty, Rava said, we go ahead and we say that onus has no impact whatsoever on Gittin. Because if we didn't do that, the Tznuot would come along and always be suspicious or suspectful. They will say, wait a minute, the reason he didn't come back, the reason he didn't fulfill the requirement that he said is because something happened to him. There was some onus that happened. And because of that, he didn't come back. And that means we're really still married. And because of that chashash, they would remain agunot and would be unwilling to get married. And the other side, we have the prutzot, who are not, they're not going to think anything. They're just going to basically do, which is they're going to assume, even though it's pretty clear that there might have been some unforeseen circumstance here, they're going to say we have the get, and they're going to act on the get. And that's going to cause a problem when the husband shows up and says, I really was be'ones, and I really did not have the ability to return, and therefore the get is not a good get. So because of both of those parties, we go ahead and say that kitin work independent of that. We don't want onus to have any impact, and therefore we're going to ignore it. Know that if you set up conditions with regards to kitin, that we will not pay attention, we will not consider onus, even though you should, but we won't consider it. So the Gemara asks them, the question that begs from this, which is, umi ika mi dibdime doraita lo avi get. How can it be possible that mina Torah, this is not a get? Umishum tznuot, umishum prutzot, sharina neshirish la'alma. And because you want to make this takana, you want to establish this principle, mi derabanan, that onus has no impact over you in order to free or to make sure that these women are acting appropriately, that we're going to go and say it is a good get. So mi doraita, get pasul. Midrabanan, get kasher. How do you have a get kasher midrabanan? Unwind a marriage midoraita because you want to set up a takana. Gemara says in, that's right. Kod mikadesh, adaita durabonan mikadesh. Anybody who gets married on the premise or with the consideration of the rabanan. Vafkinu rabanan likidushe minei. And the rabonan unwound or somehow dissolved the Kiddushin over here. This statement can be read in a number of ways, and the Rishonim each take it in those different ways, and therefore they see the mechanism working differently. When you say, Kol Dekadesh Adayt Derabbanan Mekadesh, and then Vavkinu Rabbanan Dekdushay Minei, what's the cause and what's the effect over here? You could read it that the cause is that anybody who gets married, Adayt Derabbanan Mekadesh, Tosafot explains that mechanism, which is that when everybody gets married, you say, Areyat Mikudeshet Li, Kedat Moshe V'Yisrael. That embedded in the Kiddushim is this Tanai. So there is a condition built into your Kiddushim. The Rabbanan exercise that Tanai. And therefore, the outcome is, Afkinu Rabbanan the Kiddushim Minei. Rabbanan unwind the Kiddushim because there's a built-in Tanai. Just like you put any other condition into your Kiddushim. So it's over here, there's this built-in Kiddushin that the Rabbanan can exercise, and when they do exercise it, they unwind the Kiddushin. That is the way that Rashi reads it. Rashi reads it every time you see Rashi. You see him here, you see him in Yevamot as well. When we learned it in Yevamot, Rashi is very focused on the ability of the Chachamim to unwind the Kiddushin, because they can be mevatel the Kiddushin through the Tanai. On the other hand, Tosafot reads it the other way, which is, the main way that it's functioning over here is, Afkinu Rabbanan Likidushay Minei. The Rabbanan have the power to unwind something Doraita. We see that all over Shas. The Chachamim do things that undermine things that are Doraita. We don't blow Shofar on Shabbat. We don't take Lulav on Shabbat. We have all sorts of places. Edechad, Neman. We just went through this in Yevamot, and the Gemara discussed it there as well. Edechad is Neman in the case of a woman and testimony with regards to her husband passing away. We're unwinding. Eshet ish midoraita, based on an eir echad. So is that function midrabanan? Does that function midoraita? But the same thing over there. We have the chachamim, and they're empowered to go up against the Torah in certain aspects. And this is one of them, where they, yes, basically did that. They wielded their authority to unwind a doraita. And that's what it means here. Vafkinu rabbanon l'kedushe minei. They unwound his kedushim. That's the cause. The effect is called Mekadesh, Adaita Rabbanon Mekadesh. Since the Rabbanon wield that power, by definition, when you get married, you're married Adaita Rabbanon, because they could unwind your Kedushin, knowing that they have that power to do it. Therefore, you're basically getting married knowing that that condition is built in. So they see the cause and the effect the opposite way of Rashi, and therefore you could see. In the Tosfot, he uses the terminology, Teyesh Koach L'Chachamim Nakor Davar Min HaTorah. That is what the function, or that is the power that is vested here, that they are working with. So Rashi is working with Tanai, and Tosafot is working with the power of the Chachamim to unwind. Each one of them has issues, and how it works, but what does Rashi do with the concept of Hefker, Beit Din Hefker, so on and so forth? Tosafot already in Yivamot asked the question, which one is being used? Which one's being utilized here? We have two concepts that are working here. Which one is working? So we'll explain in Rashi how it works, and we'll explain. Tosafot might explain the Gemara in Yivamot differently, because the circumstances are different there. And over there, maybe he isn't being Okir Davar Midoraita. The third time that this shows up is in Gitin, Gemara in Gitin. And the question is, can you be mafil this position with regards to get? Do we also say the same thing? By Gitin, if a husband throws a get, and it lands within Dalet Amot of Isha, the Chachamim established that anything when it's in the Dalet Amot of an individual is his personal space and your konet. They did that and they instituted that in order to stop people fighting. So that if something's within your space, within your Dalet Amot, then you're automatically konet and you don't have to fight with people over it. So now he throws a get that midoraita never reached the hand of the woman. It only reached the Dalet Amot. So there is the get effective. So again, how does it work? Why does it work over there? Do we, according to most of the Rishonim, they're mafio, the same principles that we have here? And Rashi says it right away over there. Called the Mekadesh, Adaita the Rabbanon Mekadesh. Rashi focuses on that being the key element, the Tanai being the element, says the same thing by Gitin. Tosafot focuses on the Koach HaChachamim Lakor. The Rashba in a Tshuva over there says that it applies to Kiddushin, it does not play to Gerushin. You cannot extend this principle to Gerushin because it has no application by Gerushin. And it goes on to explain why it works over there. So you have to know that your approach over here might affect how you extend it or how you extrapolate it to other places in Shas. And we're going to see there's one other opinion here. There's a third opinion, which we'll discuss in a minute. All right. Amarle, Ravina le Ravashi. So Ravina says to Ravashi, Tinach Kaddish b'kaspo. That makes sense when you're doing Kiddushin through Kesef. Kaddish b'bia, Maika le Meimar. You're doing Kiddushin through Bia. How do you unwind that type of act? Now, for Rashi, the question is, we have a Tanai. If you have a Tanai embedded here, why should there be any different? That is because, even though you have a Tanai embedded here, we're only going to exercise the Tanai if we have some sort of halachic mechanism to unwind the Kiddushin. We're not going to just be mafil the Tanai and say, Kiddushin are over, sorry, we're not going to do that. So what is the mechanism by which we're unwinding it? So by Kiddushei Kesef, we have a mechanism called Hefker Beit Din Hefker. So there we have a mechanism by which there's a halachic mechanism where we can say, if we trigger the Tanai, I can change the monies that you gave to her from Kiddushin into a Matana, because I have that halachic mechanism called Hefker Beit Din Hefker. But by Bilat Znut or Bia, what halachic mechanism are you trying to use in order to unwind the Kiddushin over here? So there is a halachic mechanism by Kesef. By Bia, there is no halachic mechanism. That's the question according to Rashi. According to Tosafot, I might have the ability, Lakor Davar Min HaTorah, when I'm talking about a transaction. When I'm talking about something that involves parties, maybe I can be okay with that. When I'm talking about a Maisa, when I'm talking about an action, how do the Chachamim have the ability to unwind an action? How can they say something is ois action? It happened. They can't say it didn't happen. How does that work? That's how Tosafot says the question is. Shavua Rabbanan lebilato bilatznut. So according to Rashi, here is the halakhic mechanism, which is the Chachamim can make your biyah into a biyah znut. they can change the considerations of why the bia was done. The bia was not done for kiddushin. The bia was a biat znut. That's what Rashi is saying. Tosfot is saying, why did the Pchamim have the power to be okar a maaseh? Right, they're not. They're changing the dynamic of the maaseh. The maaseh still exists, but they're changing how it functions or how the maaseh functions. And that's how we solve the problem. That's Rashi, Tosafot, that's your mainstream Rishonim that deal with it. Rashi here, and in the Gemara in Yevamot, quotes his Rebbeim. He says, all my Rebbeim say this, and he says, I disagree with my Rebbeim. This is Rashi. Rashi, who is one of the most tied to Mesorah that we know, most of Rashi, almost everything Rashi says, he quotes from his Rebbeim, or is from his Rebbeim. Here he takes extremely strong stance against his Rebbeim, and he says, every one of my Rebbeim says this. We have a similar thing found in the Rabbeinu Gershom in Baba Batra, who quotes a similar idea. And similarly, the Rambam says the exact same thing. They say there's a difference in the vehicle that you use for Kiddushin. We know that there are three vehicles that you can use for Kiddushin. Kiddushin, the Mishnah in the beginning of Kiddushin says there are three ways to create Kiddushin. One is Kesef, one is Shtar, one is Bia. Kesef, Shtar, Bia are the three vehicles by which one can create Kiddushin. What they say is, Kesef is not the same as Shtar and Bia. Shtar and Bia are Kiddushin Midoraita. Kesef is Kiddushin Midorabanan. You can only create Kiddushin Midorabanan through Kesef, because Kesef is not written in the Torah, and therefore, Kesef is only Kiddushin Derabanan. It's learned through Gzeir Shava of Kicha Kicha from Stei Ephron. And that Gzeir Shava only allows you to get to a level Derabanan. Now, it's very appealing, because then this Gemara makes a lot of sense. According to Rashi and Tosafot in the Gemara, why is there a difference between Kesef and Bia? Really, they're both functioning as levels Deoraita, number one. Number two is, the unwinding of the Kiddushin, according to both of them, has to be L'mafreya, retroactively. Because the only way they can get it to work is to attack the Kiddushin itself originally. Whereas, what the Rebbeim Shirashi do is now change the whole playing field. The Gemara's question is, and the Gemara's question makes a lot of sense here. I understand how this works by Kiddushe Kesef. Why do I understand why it works by Kiddushe Kesef? Because Kudeshe Kesef are Derabanan. If Kiddushe Kesef are Derabanan, Hei Mamru Vehei Mamru. They said it works for Kiddushin. They can also say the get works, even though the get's not a get right. It can be a get derabanan. They can unwind Kiddushin midrabanan with the get midrabanan. It can be mekanal haba. It can be prospectively that the get works. You don't have to oker retroactively. You could just say the kol mekadesh adaita rabbanu mekadesh v'afkina rabbanu nekdushe minei, because when you use Kiddushe Kesef, then you are working with a derabanan, and therefore the rabbanan can unwind the Kiddushin midrabanan the same way. They can function within the world of Derabanan. Number two is, do Kiddushe Derabanan, then you have all the room in the world to work. The Gemara comes along and says, Bia. I understand Kiddushe Kesef. How do you deal with Kiddushe Bia? Kiddushe Bia are De'oraita. You have De'oraita. How are you going to unwind Kiddushe Midoraita? What's the answer of the Gemara? Shavua, the Bilat. So, Bilat Znut. But so now, what's the answer for the Rebbeim of Rashi? When they say here, Shavuot Bilato Bilat Znut, they read the Gemara that we actually quoted in Yevamot on Kuf Yud Chet, and Rashi quotes it over there. Rav Mangid B'man De Mekadesh B'Bia. Rav gives Malkot to someone who does Kiddushin through Bia. That's what we said was the Chet. When you do Kiddushay Bia, there's a Chet. What's the Chet? So there, Rashi, everybody quotes the Chet being that Rav objected to people doing it, and we give Malkot for people who do this. Kiddushin through Bia. Rebbeim of Rashi understood that differently and said, Rav Mangid, Mekadesh B'Bia, is that the Chachamim took away that vehicle for creating Kiddushin. When they say, Shavua L'Bilato B'Ilat Znut, is that the Chachamim didn't just make it into B'Ilat Znut, they shut down that way of creating Kiddushin. They say, the only way to do Kiddushin going forward is Kiddushe Kesef, not Kiddushe Bia. We're never going to run into this problem, because Kiddushe Bia don't work anymore. Kiddushe Bia are suspended. They no longer work. We have a similar concept in the Tabenu Rabbeinu Yona. Tabenu Rabbeinu Yona in the Gemara and Brachot say, what happens if you say Kriyat Shema after Chatzot? The Chachamim say you have to say Kriyat Shema before Chatzot. What happens if you say Kriyat Shema after Chatzot? The Pashtura Gemara, and most of you shouldn't believe, you're still Yotze. The Rabbanan said, please do it before Chatzot. That's what we want. Right. Please do it before Chatzot. If you do it after Chatzot, you lose out on keeping the word of the Chachamim, but you're still Yotze Midoraita. So Bina Rei Noyona say, we suspend your right. You can no longer say Kriyat Shema after Chatzot. Similar thing here. The Rebbeim of Rashi said that's what happened here. Kiddushei Bia, on one hand, are the best way to create Kiddushin. It's the vehicle that the Torah says, Kegach Ishisha Uva'ala. On the other hand, their most offensive way to create Kiddushin, because they are such an intimate and forthright way to engage the woman, that it's almost a chutzpah to do it. And that's how Rabbeinu Gershom, actually, in Baba Batra, explains why they suspended it. It says chutzpahi. If you go ahead and do it, when the Rabbanan said don't do it, that's a chutzpah, and we're not going to let it go through. And what they see is that there's a suspension of that vehicle, and the only vehicle is Kedusha Kester. So what's the solution to the problem now? Nobody's getting married deoraita. Everybody's getting married with Kedusha Kester, and therefore, there's only one way to get married, Dirabanan, with Kiddushin, and the Rabbanan can always unwind it. That is the way that the Rebbeim of Rashi explained the Gemara. Rashi takes them on so strongly, like with fire and brimstone. How can you say that? Why? He brings two reasons why you can't say that it's the Rabbanan. First of all, he says, if a woman got married with Kiddushe Kesef, she was an Arusa, she had an extramarital affair, we would give her Skila. How can you give a woman Skila, capital punishment, if it was only Kiddushe Midrabbanan? Kiddushe Midrabbanan, you're going to give her Skila? That's for Kiddushe Deoraita. How could you possibly say that you get Skila? Number one. Number two, if this woman, Bishogeg, has an extramarital affair, she has to bring a Korban Chatat to the Migdash. There's no such thing as a voluntary Korban Chatat. She's going to be bringing Chulin Le'azara. If this is only Kiddushin Derabanan, how could we force her to bring a Chatat to the Migdash? Those are Rashi's two questions, very strong questions against his Rebbeim. Rashi also rejects the ability of the Chachamim to suspend Bia as a vehicle for Kiddushin, because how can they be Oker Davar Min HaTorah? They can make suggestions. They could say, we don't want you to do it, but they can't be Oker Davar Min HaTorah. And that's the third reason that he rejects his Rebbeim. For that reason, he rejects this position of his Rebbeim and gives the explanation that we saw, and Tosafot obviously follows in his footsteps. The Rambam, in codifying this halacha, brings down there are three ways to do Kiddushin. Bia, Shtar, Umidivrei Sofrim, Kesef. That's what the Rambam says. Umidivrei Sofrim, Kesef. So there are three different approaches to the Rambam about what it means when he says Umidivrei Sofrim, that the Kiddushei Kesef are Midivrei Sofrim. There is the approach of the Raivud, the Ramban, and Rav Avram ben Rambam. All three of them say the Rambam meant that Kiddushei Kesef are Midrabanan, just like the Rebbeim of Rashi. The Raivud quotes it and says this sounds like the Rebbeim of Rashi, and it's Tod Gamur. That's what the Raivud says. The Ramban says, if you look in the Sefer HaMitzvot, this is the Rambam, the Shitato, who says that when you learn something through a Gzera Shava, or one of the Shlosh Esrei Midot, it does not automatically become Doraita. If you learn something through one of the Shlosh Esrei Midot, like Gzera Shava, it's only Doraita if the Chachamim say it's Doraita. They say it's Doraita, then it's Doraita, otherwise it remains a Derabanan. And over here, it's learned through a Gzer Shavav, Kicha, Kicha, and the Chachamim never say that it is Doraita. The Rav Avram ben Rambam, when asked about it, says his father thought it was Derabanan, and later on his wife changed his mind and said it was Doraita. That's what the Rav Avram ben Rambam says. The problem is that we have all the Kitvei Yad of the Rambam, we find no change in his position anywhere. And we also have a Tshuva from the Rambam. Tshuva of Rambam to Rav Pinchas HaDayan, who asks exactly this question. And the Rambam answers, and he says, I'll explain it to you. Kiddushei Bia, mentioned in the Torah. Kiddushei Shtar is learnt out of Gitin. He says that the Gemara in Kiddushin, mentions Kiddushei Shtar and says Kiddushei Shtar is Doraita. Therefore, it changes it into a Doraita, even though it's a Limud Midrabanan, because it says that Kiddushei Shtar is Doraita. The Ramban takes him to task on that, because that's only a Havamina in the Gemara. It's not the Maskana of the Gemara. But he says, there it says, Shtar is Doraita. So that's Doraita. Kiddushei Kesef is Gzera Shava, but it's never mentioned as being Doraita. And he says, I told you in Sefer HaMitzvot, in my introduction, like the Ramban says, the Rambam in his Tshuva says exactly what the Ramban explained in the Rambam, that that's Derabonon. And therefore, the Rambam believes that Midivrei Sofrim means Derabonon, like the Rebbeim of Rashi. There are a slew of commentaries, like all the commentaries on the Rambam, Lecha Mishnah, Magi Mishnah, Kesef Mishnah, every one of them say that Midivrei Sofrim doesn't mean Midrabanan, that it's definitely Deoraita. The Rambam, when he said Divrei Sofrim really meant Deoraita, there is that third Shita, which explains that Divrei Sofrim means that the Rabbanan used a vehicle to get to Deoraita. This is what Shaul was mentioning. That many in the belief that when the Rambam uses Midivrei Sofrim, doesn't always mean Midrabanan, it means that the Rabbanan used the Limud. So sometimes it could be a limud that gets you to a raita. Sometimes it means it's a limud that's an asmach that gets you to Rabbanan. If you look through the entire Rambam, everywhere he uses Midivrei Sofrim, it's inconclusive. He uses it at the Rabbanan, the raita uses it all over the place. I heard over from Rav Rosenzweig that he wanted to explain the Rambam, that the Rambam was actually trying to create a hierarchy in the nature of the mitzvot over here. And the Rambam does this in different places, which is, he explains to you that something might work Deoraita, but it might have different levels in that perspective. And that is, if you look at Biyah as the vehicle for Kiddushin, number one, it's found in the Torah. Number two is, it's found in the Torah in the Parsha of getting married. Kikach ish isha uvala. So there, that is the most powerful vehicle in terms of Kiddushin. It's the one mentioned in the Torah. It's the most obvious one to use because it's explicitly written in the Torah. And therefore, if I was to give you a hierarchy, Biyah would be the first one in that hierarchy, because it's the most obvious. Shtar, on the other hand, is never mentioned by Kiddushin. Shtar is mentioned by Gitin, by divorce. But it's still in the world of marriage, at least. It's a vehicle that's used in the world of marriage. Anytime we talk about a document or a contract in the Gemara, the paradigm for that is the Shtar Kiddushin, the get. The get, the word get itself, really means a contract between people or a document between people. The Gemara uses it loosely. We use today meaning as a meaning of get, like a proper noun, which means a divorce document. But get meant a document. So now, what we've done is, taking something from the world of marriage, it was in Gerushin, we moved it over to Kiddushin. That would be something that's in the second level of hierarchy. It's a vehicle that's mentioned in the Torah. It's mentioned in the world of marriage. But now I'm moving it over to the world of, from Gerushin over to Kiddushin. And therefore, yes, it's Doraita, but it's on a second level. I have a third vehicle, Kesef. Kesef never makes an appearance in the world of marriage. Kesef is from the world of contracts and business. I'm taking a mechanism that's in the world of business, and now I'm bringing it over to the world of marriage. If I was to look at that, that's the most foreign vehicle in order to create Kiddushin. And that's what is meant when the Rambam says, Umitivrei Sofrim. This is what Rav Rosenzweig explained, that he's not trying to tell you Doraita Derabanan. Whenever the Rambam uses the word Divrei Sofrim, he's telling you a relative relationship to the other pieces there. He had to cut it somewhere. I mean, he could have said Bia then versus Shtar and Kesef, or it could be Bia Shtar versus Kesef, and that's the way the Rambam chose to delineate it. Kesef is very different than Bia and Shtar. Bia and Shtar make appearances, cameos, in the world of marriage. Kesef has no appearance in the world of marriage. And that's the explanation of Divrei Sofrim in the Rambam, that he's trying to give you a relative hierarchy as to the mechanisms that are given here. Now, in the end, the Rabbanan come and unwind that and say, we don't want you doing Biyah, we want you doing Kesef. But without that, the hierarchy we would have seen is Biyah, Shtar, Kesef, and we would have favored Biyah over Kesef. Now, there are, again, for both reasons. Biyah, it seems to be the best vehicle and the most intimate vehicle for Kiddushin. On the other hand, it's the most dangerous vehicle because of its intimacy and because of its forthrightness. The way that it is, in a sense, too forthright and too close. And therefore, the Chachamim said, even though that might be the way the Torah wanted it, we don't think it's working as well, and therefore we're going to flip it to the other side and force Kesef versus Biyah. And that's what the Rambam says, even though the hierarchy goes the other way. That's the explanation that Rav Rosenzweig gave for the Rambam. It's a beautiful way to understand Midivrei Sofrim in the Rambam, in terms of a hierarchy, rather than delineating whether it's Doraita or Dirabanan. But one thing to remember here is that the Rambam himself never mentions the word Afkinu Rabbanan LeKiddushei. The Rambam paskins, like all these cases that the Chachamim say that they were Oker Kiddushin, he never says the words Afkinu Rabbanan LeKiddushei Mineh. He never mentions those words. It's very clear what the Rambam is doing. The Rambam sees that as, like the Tosafot suggest here, an authority of the Chachamim to unwind Kiddushin. And that's a dangerous power that we don't want people to wield, and we don't want used. And therefore, what the Rambam basically does is gets to the conclusion without ever mentioning the concept, because the concept is too dangerous, and we don't want the concept used. And to your question, the Ramban says, Halavai, we should be able to use in all these cases. The Rambam is a very thick. The Rambam says this is too much authority, and if we do this, it's going to be abused. It's a power that can be abused. It can be used to help people, but it also can be used to ruin people's lives and to ruin things. And if we invest that power in the Chachamim, it's going to lead to dangerous results. Therefore, we're going to limit it to wherever the Gemara said that we utilized it. We're not going to use it outside of those cases because of the danger in wielding such power. And again, the Rambam does this by never mentioning that power and never, ever, ever granting that power to the Chachamim in order to unwind the Kiddushin. He tells you the results based on the Gemara, but he never tells you that vehicle of Afkinu Rabbanon the Kiddushin Minei. That word, those words are never mentioned. You can see already, Tosafot takes it to heart. It says, oh, look at the power of the Chachamim. That's what, exactly what the Rambam is trying to go against. And that's again why we don't wield it or don't use it today, is because it is a very dangerous power. Iged Amrei. Some suggest that Rava's statement is just the opposite. Amar Rava v'chein l'inyan gitin. Again, this references back to when we concluded that Ones has an impact on Kiddushin and the ability of the person to postpone this to win. That Ones would be a tour for him. He says, v'chein l'inyan gitin. Ones works by gitin. Amar kasava Rava yesh Ones b'gitin. So you see here, the Rava believes that there is such a concept as Ones b'gitin. Meitave. Now we're going to go through all the questions we asked yesterday, just coming in the opposite direction now. This is your get. If you don't come within the next 12 months, umeit, betoch 12 chodesh, he dies within that 12-month period, and uget. It's not a get. Can't give a get after you're dead, so obviously it's not going to work. Meitave no get. Hachala hari is a get. From the example in the Mishnah, it sounds like only if you get died that it's a get. If he was sick, it would have been a get. So you see that there is no ones begitin. No, that even if you got sick, it's not a get. That's what it's coming to teach us. That there is no get achar mita. Ein get achar mita. Hatana le'reisha. That's already in that Mishnah. Because there we have all the cases that were listed in that Mishnah. Maybe the reason they raised it twice is to exclude the position of the Rabbeinu, which is based in Rabbi Yossi, who says that when you date the shtar, that's the equivalent of saying me'achshav, and therefore the shtar, even though he dies, the get has impact. Tashma, what about the last case? Me'achshav im lo bati mikan vat 12 chodesh umeit betok 12 chodesh. He says, from now, this get is effective if I don't come back in 12 months. Umeit betok 12 chodesh, there is a get. It is a good get. My love, hu adin l'chala. Over there again, just like it's a good get when he dies, it should be a good get when he get sick. So there you see again support for the fact that ones has no impact whatsoever on the get. Because even when he's sick, we say that the Tanai goes through, even though his inability to mekayim the Tanai was for something out of his hands that he was sick. Lo, mate, davka. Only by mate that it works. But by chala, it would not work. The reason by mate we let it work is because there he really had in mind for it to be effective, because he wants to save his wife from Yibum. So therefore when he dies, that's exactly what he had in mind. But he did not have in mind the inability to return when he got sick. That's not what he had in mind. Tashma. So then we'll bring the proof that was the definitive proof to the other side of Rava. That a person who says that if I don't return within 30 days, this is a get. He comes back at the end of the 30 days. The ferries aren't working. The bridge isn't there. He screams across. I'm here. Don't let the get go through. He didn't come. Sorry. He didn't come. The get's effective. So you see there that the ones has no bearing on the get. It has no impact whatsoever on the get. Mar says, no. That's not a proof. Unsa de shchiach shiny. By ones, that is shchiach. That is not the case. The kaven de yibayle le'atnuye v'lo atne. Since he should have put a condition in, anticipated this, it's something that happens frequently. It's not called an ones anymore. It's called something that he should have foreseen. So therefore, he himself lost out on this. So if you look in Tosafot in the Iged Amrei, it says Pasuk Rabbeinu Chananel Kalishne Kama. He says that we paskin like the Lishne Kama of Rava, who says that Amar Rava in Gitin ain't okay. That Rava says that it's not like that by Gitin. That was the first lashon of Rava, not like the second lashon of Rava. And he says, "V'chein nira dalib adikarame yave pirche mikohani demaitisiyata lulinshnakama." He says, "Wait a minute, dalib adikarame over here have a pirche. All the proofs that we brought from the first case now become questions in the second case. Demaitisiyata lulinshnakama. And over here, the Gemara answers in each case a difficult answer, even though they seem to be proofs to the first Lashon. They give answers that unwind it. V'kasha l'ri, the Ri has a question on this, because it seems if we say over there that there's no ones v'gitin, we find other places in Shas where there is ones v'gitin. So if you go down to the widest lines in the Tosafot, the second line down in the widest lines of the Tosafot, towards the end of that line, it says, V'omari, the gimel inyanei ones hein. There are three different types of ones. This is a classic Tosafot. Ones the loshkeach klal. There's an ones which doesn't happen at all. In that case, afilu lishnakama derava acha yesh ones. That, and everybody agrees. Lishnakama derava, lishnabaja derava. A complete ones. Something completely or unforeseen. Something that never happens. In that case, everybody agrees that type of ones can unwind the get. That still is functional within gitin. Then, there's also a different type of ones, which is ones dishriach. Ones that is common, like the case over here, the Paske Mavra, case where the river comes along and blocks him or the ferry's not working, that's an ones that should be anticipated. In that case, everybody agrees that there's an ones, even the second Lishna. Both Lishanot and Rava will agree, no ones in that case. Where do they argue? They argue in a case that ones to Shchiach or Lo Shchiach, an ones that falls between those two. So there's completely unforeseen, foreseeable ones, those two, everybody agrees that the din is, ones works when it's completely unforeseen. Where it's foreseeable, then it doesn't work according to everybody, because you should have anticipated it. Then there's this middle, ones velo shkiach velo shkiach, this middle grouping, that's the machloki between the ikad amres over here, and there, that's where we paskin like the lashon rishon, which is the hilchotek lashon lishnakam of Rava, that we do not consider that type of ones, we suspend that ones, we do not consider it, with regards to Kitin. So that's how Tosfot explains this Gemara. Right now, the Gemara continues and says, Amar of Shmuel by Yitzchak, Lo shanu el mitakanat Ezra Veilech. This is only true from the takana of Ezra Veilech, Shein bati dinim kvuim, alo b'sheni v'chamishi. That means that bati dinim only sit on Monday and Thursday. Avo kodim takanat Ezra, shebati dinim kvuim b'cho yom, that bati dinim were found on every day, isha niseit b'cho yom. So that means that a woman can get married on any day because the Bati Dinim are always there. So the reason that's given in the Mishnah is not relevant. Mar says, Kodem Takanat Ezra, before the Takanat of Ezra, Maida Hava Hava. That's history. Why does that matter to us? Why do we care what was before Takanat Ezra? We live in a world after Takanat Ezra. Says, Achi Kamar, Iika Bati Dinim to Kvuyim Aidna, Kodem Takanat Ezra. If we have Bati Dinim that are Kvuyim, like prior to the time of Ezra, Isha Niseit B'choyom. Therefore, an Isha will be on any day. So Gemara says, Habin and Shaktu. What about the fact that the Chachamim established that you need 3 days for the husband to invest in the preparations of the Suda? The Tarichle, he prepared beforehand. He did the work before Shabbat, and therefore he was ready to go on the Sunday, and then he can do it, or whatever day of the week that he wants to do it. There is a machloket in the Rishonim as to exactly what transpired before the Takanat Ezra. What does it mean that they were Batei Dinim Kvuim? So some say, simply what Pashtut Gemara is that, before Takanat Ezra, the Bati Dinim were there all the time. They sat all the time. And after Takanat Ezra, they simply sat on Monday and Thursday. It seems a little strange, because why would Ezra come along and say, oh, they sit every day? No, make it on Monday and Thursday. So the Rishonim take two approaches to that. One approach is to say, before Takanat Ezra, they only had Bati Dinim in the big cities. They did not have them in the smaller cities. The Takanat Ezra was that every Monday and Thursday, there should be Bati Dinim. In the smaller cities, in the villages, everywhere, there should be Bati Dinim. That was the Takanat of Ezra. And not only in the big cities did they have it, but they also had it in the smaller cities. In the big cities, they had it every day. But now he established that on Monday and Thursday, they should have it in the smaller cities. According to the other Rishonim, what happened beforehand was, Beit Din used to sit whenever had a case. Whenever there's a case, they used to come. So you never knew when Beit Din was going to sit, because you had to have cases, they had to have enough caseload, they had to have a reason to sit, they brought the Beit Din together. So it was never known. They could sit 3 days in a row, then they could sit for a week, and so on and so forth. So whenever Beit Din was there, they had to rush, they had to do a wedding. So Ezra established that Monday and Thursday, everybody knows that the Bati Dinim are definitely there on Monday and Thursday, and that changed the dynamics. Everybody knew they could bring their cases on Mondays and Thursday. It also affects when you can get married, because you know if you get married on Wednesday, for sure there'll be a Beit Din there on Thursday. So that's the other view of the Rishonim as to what transpired over here. Now, the Gemara says, my Shaktu. What is this din of Shaktu? Now, on Daf Beit Amud Aleph, we saw Shmuel told us what Shaktu is. Gemara wants a Tanaic source. Over here, you're talking an Amoraic source of Shmuel, then you can't ask on another Amora. But if you bring a Tanaic source from it, then all of a sudden it takes on the power of Tanaim, then you can ask questions based on Shaktu. And that is my Shaktu, the Tanya. We have a bright Why does a betula get married on Wednesday? And he get up early in the morning, go to Beit Din. We saw Machloket Rashi and Tosafot. That's why that was established. So Mara says, "V'tina say be'achad b'Shabbat." What about Sunday? Sunday also has Monday morning with the Beit Din. Because if Ma'ayelot Tanuk B'tulayim, Haya Mashkim the Beit Din. Here's the answer: Shaktuch Chachamim Atachanot B'nei Yisrael. Chachamim were careful; they took consideration of the Takanat B'nei Yisrael, which I spoke about yesterday. Why it's to their benefit? We'll see this later on in the Gemara. She'adam Toreach B'Sudah Shlosha Yamim. That a person should invest in the Sudat Nisuim for 3 days. Echad B'Shabbat, B'Sheni B'Shabbat, B'Shlishi B'Shabbat. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. The wedding happens on Wednesday. They need time to prepare for the wedding. Again, no refrigeration in times where preparation, everything is fresh. It's really important to have this preparation time in order to get everything ready. From the time that there was danger, the Braita does not define for us what danger is. They changed and started getting married on Tuesdays. The Chachamim did not object to that. On Mondays, they should not get married. Rashi says over here, the reason is that if you're already going to change the Takar Chachamim, it suffices to move it to Tuesday, don't move it 2 days back. Move it 1 day back, that's enough. In Machmata Ones, if it is because there's some sort of extenuating circumstance, again, the Braita does not define what it is, Mutar, then you can even do it on Monday. This again will be in the upcoming Gemarot, we won't deal with this now. But they separate the Khatan and Kala from each other if they get married in a way that they are going to have bi'ah on Friday night. Because if they have bi'ah on Friday night, that's a chabura. And making a chabura on Shabbat is asur. It says asur to make a chabura on Shabbat. We're not going to allow them to be together for their first time because of the bitulim on Friday night. So Tosafot says on the previous amud that today, where we don't have batidinim, and therefore the way that we adjudicate things is we get three people together to make a beitin, everything's an ad hoc Beit Din because of that. Then you can get married on any day because you get a Beit Din together whenever you want. And basically, if he's upset, he'll get up in the morning. And therefore, Vata, Tosfot says, Noagim Lisa Af Bishishi. We even get married on Fridays today. Te'en Beit Din Kivuin, since we have no Beit Din Kivuin, and therefore the practice is to get married on Fridays. And again, that's what I spoke about yesterday, this idea that they were getting married in those times on Fridays. All right. My Sakana. What's the danger over here? What is this danger that they are saying you can move it from Wednesday back to Tuesday? If you say that they said any betula that gets married on a Wednesday will be killed. So nahagu, they had the common custom not to do it on Wednesday. They did it on Tuesday instead. Let's get rid of this takana. If it's yehareg v'ayavur, let's unwind the takana. Now this is very interesting because we have a principle in the Gemara in Sanhedrin in Perek Ben Sorero Moreh that whenever there is a gzeret hashmad, you're not allowed to change anything. You're not allowed to unwind anything that's there. So Gemara here suggests, Nakre, let's get rid of it. What do you mean get rid of it? If you have a gzeret hashmad, you're not allowed to undo things. So the Rivash here, I think the Haggadah Shri also has it, has an unbelievable statement over here. He says that over here it's a tekanat chachamim. The chachamim are not under the gzeret hashmad. The shmad or the gzeirah is against the betulot who follow the takanat chachamim. Therefore, if the chachamim who establish the takanah get together and unwind the takanah, they're not doing it because they're under the threat of death. They don't have any pressure on them. They're not unwinding it because of the gzeirah tashmad. Unbelievable chiddush in the Rivash. And he says, therefore, they could come unwind it. And in addition to that, I think the Haggadah Shri adds on a third chiddush, which is that even if they're not a bigger Beit Din than the previous Beit Din, it's a built-in tznai. And every takana that faces a gzeret hashmad or a tzakana, that they grant the permission to bati dinim after them to unwind it, and to take away the takana. And that's what's meant by the Gemara over here in the Akre. Now all the other Rishonim do not say that. They just say that there is no problem over here. Why? Because this gzerah that came up against the takana was a very local gzerah. It wasn't taking on the faith of the Jews. It was just the hegemon taking advantage of a situation, lehanato, for his own benefit. So in that case, it's not an issue of gzeret hashmad, and we could cancel the takana and preserve the lives of these individuals. Why should we force them to give up their lives and be in this predicament if we can just cancel the takana? Because there's no din of shmad, but you have to know why. That's the question over here. What are they attacking? If they're attacking the Jewish faith, then we should have to leave it in place. In Ochanami, we have to leave it in place. If they're attacking something that is important and unique
to us, but they are not going up against the fundamentals of our faith, then you would say,
just change the minhag to the other day. All right, so then the Gemara says, Amar Rabba, Damrei Betulah Niseit B'Yom Revi, Tiba'el Hegmon Tchila. They had this rule that any woman who got married on a Wednesday has to first spend time with the leader, and whether he is the mayor or the governor, whatever position that he held, some sort of powerful position, he got to take care of every betulah before they were married. So, hi, sakana. What do you mean, sakana? This is not sakana. Why? They're not going to lose their lives. They subject themselves to the hegemon. So, onesu. The girl says, but it's really just, they're being forced. And in being forced, they're allowed to go through it. Why? Because there's no din of Te'areg v'al yavor. A woman does not have the din of Te'areg v'al yavor. It's only true by Gilei Arayot, by a man. It doesn't apply to a female. That happens to be a machloket Rishonim. I'm not going to get into it now. But assuming, that's what most of Rishonim assume here, the woman is Karka Olam. And since she's Karka Olam, she has no reason to give up her life over here. She's a passive participant. She's being raped. And since she's being raped, she doesn't have to give up her life. She doesn't have to desist over here. So it says, Mishum de'ikat snuot, de masrin nafshayu lekatala. There are these women who are snuot, unwilling to go through with this, and they're going to think they have to give up their life. They're going to commit suicide, not go let themselves go through with such a terrible gzeira. They think that it's unbecoming of a bat Yisrael, and therefore they're not going to go through with it. Actually, they sakana, and they're going to lose their lives because they're not going to go through with it. So just tell them. Tell them the halacha. So they know what the halacha is. Ika prutzot. If we start announcing what the halacha is, then we're going to end up with some prutzot too. Ikanami kohanot. The problem of prutzot are, they're going to some women who are going to start saying willingly going there. No longer they say that they're taking him by force. They're going to willingly submit to this because they say, okay, the chachamim said it's okay. So let me willingly, I'm going to give in. I'm not going to be. They're not going to be in a position of force. They're going to be in a position of willing acceptance. If they're willing, then they can't go back to their husbands. They're going to be out. Also, kohanot, even if they are done against their will, even though they're manis, they can't go in through with the marriage then. So we have women who are going to be affected by this. So therefore, we're not going to allow women to be raped and allow the tekanas to stand. Therefore, we said, let them do it on Tuesday. So the Gemara says, v'le'akre, why don't we do the akira to get rid of the takana? Why are you saying we let them do it on Tuesday? Just say there's no more takana. Zera avida debatla. Gemara has a worldview that's true for Jews throughout history. The gzera pass. Takanat de rabbanan become gzera lo akrina. The takana will stand the test of time. Gzerot will come and go. We'll be oppressed at sometimes, but the oppression will go away. So why eliminate the takana if once the gzera disappears, the takana can still hold water and can still be in place? So that's exactly what they're saying. Keep the takana. We'll allow them to violate the takana in order to get out of the problem. So that's what the minhag. The minhag was to get married on Tuesday to get out of the problem. Once the gzera goes away, they'll go back to doing it on Wednesdays. Instead of trying to ruin the takana, leave the takana, say there's a dispensation to get out of it, but once the dispensation is gone because there's no gzera, we can go back to the old way. Now, iyachi bishlishi nami ati ubayo. It says, what type of solution is this? If everybody starts switching from Wednesday to Tuesday, then what? The guy's going to show up on Tuesday instead of Wednesday. For a sofek, he's not going to make the trip. Okay, this is like a pleasure trip for him. If he knows he's going to have women ready for him, he's going to show up. When they followed the takana, he knew for sure people were getting married on Wednesdays. No question. He showed up on a Wednesday, there was going to be a marriage. Over here, since what they did now is some are getting married on Wednesdays, some on Tuesdays, they were moving it around, he was never certain which day to show up. So he could make the whole trip, and there'd be nobody available for him. So it wasn't worth his time to come out. So because of that, they just basically played around, moved it around a bit. Once they didn't establish as a fixed time that always get married on this day, it was no longer worth his while to show up because he never knew when the weddings were. He had to travel, obviously. He had to come a long way. Tosafot over here, and mentioning why is it that if the women subject themselves to the hegemon, that they are called anonis, that they are not chayavot to give up their lives. So most Rishonim say because karkolam, they are considered to be passive participants, and therefore they do not have to give up their lives for it. The Rabbeinu Tam has a very radical approach over here. We saw it in the Rabbeinu Tam in Yevamot. He mentioned it there as well. And he says, "V'teretz Rabbeinu Tam, de'in chayivim mitah bilat mitzri." There is no chiyuv mitah for having a bia with a mitzri. The Rachmana Afkare the Zarei de Mitzri. Because the Torah made the Biyav in Mitzri like a Biyat Behema. So what he suggests is we take that literally. That the Biyah of a Nochri, of a non-Jew, is the equivalent of a Biyat Behema. And therefore, number one, an extramarital affair with a Nochri is not going to be considered a Biyah that brings her the Mitah, because that's only a Biyat Behema. It's also not going to force her to have to give up her life over here, because it's not called Gilui Arayot in that sense. She's not going to have to give up her life because it's not called a Biyah. This approach is Rabbeinu Tam, and therefore he comes up with this amazing thing. He says, what happens if a girl, a young Jewish girl, decides to run away with a non-Jewish man? Himira data. She gave up her faith. She was married to a Jewish man. She decides that she doesn't want to be Jewish anymore, and she runs off with a non-Jewish man. Then after some time, she decides to do tshuva, and her non-Jewish husband also wants to join her and converts. So normally in that case, we would say that the Boel, the one that she had this extramarital affair with, is Asura. And therefore, she can't bring him back and marry him afterwards. Rabbeinu Tam says, no problem. When he converts, she can come back and she can marry him. Why? Because Biyato is Biyat Behema. It wasn't a real Biyah. Since it wasn't a real Biyah, she can again convert him and marry him, because she never really had a Boel. She never had an extramarital affair. Unbelievable Chiddush of the Rabbeinu Tam, which Tosafot rejects. But we have to understand why other Rishonim reject this and don't accept what the Rabbeinu Tam says. The Ritva says something similar to the Rabbeinu Tam, but he uses a different principle. He says, Ger kiktinok shenolad dami. A ger is a convert, like a new man. Since he's a new man, he's not the Boel that was there before. Again, the Rishonim reject both the Ritva. The Rivam also over here rejects the understanding of the Rabbeinu Tam. But let's understand why. Many of the Rishonim reject the Ritva because when do we say a ger is kekatan shinola dami or ketinok shinola dami? That is when it's talking about something that is unique to the Jewish faith. When it's something unique to the Jewish faith, then we would say that it doesn't carry through. But when it's something that is a universal principle, like marriage or extramarital affairs, that's something that's not going to be suspended by his conversion. Just because he converts doesn't change those universal principles. Those universal principles that were there before are there afterwards. And so if he was a Boel before, he's going to be a Boel afterwards. You can't take that away just because he converted. It doesn't clean your slate in that way when you're dealing with universal principles. So that's why many of the Rishonim reject the Ritva. Many of the Rishonim reject the Rabbeinu Tam, because the Rabbeinu Tam says that it's not a Biyah. The others say no, and that's what the Rivam says over here. The Biyah of a Nachri is a Biyah. It's a Biyah Behema, the God of Yichus, that he has no Yichus. It doesn't mean that he doesn't have a Biyah, it means that he has no Yichus. His Yichus is like a Behema. But his Biyah is a real Biyah, and therefore we're going to consider it like a real Biyah. Now, in the sheet of the Rabbeinu Tam, there are Rishonim that argue what is the status for the Baal, the husband. When she goes ahead and has this extramarital affair with the Goy, and it's not called to be a Biyah, what is the status of the Baal? So Rishonim have different approaches. Some suggest that the Baal is mutar, just like it's not a Biyah by the Boel, it's not a Biyah for the Baal. But there are some Rishonim that suggest that she will be not considered a Biyah for the Boel, but for the husband, she'll be Asura. So then you come again to this absurd conclusion. She will conduct an extramarital affair with a Goy. She will now be restricted from returning to her husband because it is classified as a Biyah. On the other hand, she will be allowed to marry this man if he converts, because her Biyah with him is not considered to be a Biyah. And therefore, her extramarital affair was not with the Boel, and she's not Oser the Boel like a classic extramarital affair. So you end up with this absurdity. So I heard in the name of Aaron Lichtenstein an explanation for this. And that is that the item that makes the Baal Asur versus what makes the Boel Asur are actually different. And that is that it is the act of Biyah, but the act of Biyah with regards to the husband, it makes her a surah to the husband because, not because of the biyah itself, but because it's an act of begidah. It's an act of betrayal. She betrayed her husband. And in betraying her husband, that's what makes her a surah to go back. The Navi is replete with these examples in Yirmiyahu, Yishayahu, the example of Bnei Yisrael worshipping Avodah Zarah, being a betrayal or begidah in Hashem. That's the same thing over here. The fact that this woman went off with another man is a betrayal of her husband. That's why she's a surah to go back to her original husband. On the other hand, what makes her a surah, the Boel, is not the betrayal of her husband, but the act of Biyah. The Biyah itself is what makes her a surah to the Boel, because that's an action that is an inappropriate activity with another man. Therefore, exactly what's going to come with the Rabbeinu Tam Shita. Over here, where she has Biyah with an Oveid Kochavim. Regards to halachic Biyah, there was no Biyah over here. Therefore, she's muteret to the Boel if he converts. On the other hand, in terms of an act of betrayal, this certainly is an act of betrayal. There is Biyah here. Even though it doesn't take on the status of halachic Biyah, there definitely was Biyah here, and that's a betrayal of her husband. Therefore, she would be a surat to her husband, even though she would be muteret to the Boel after the fact if he converted. So that's a way to explain this shita of the Rabbeinu Tam, and it gives us a deeper insight into the isur that is produced when a woman has an extramarital affair, why she's a surah to her husband, and why she's a surah to the Boel. On Monday, they should not get married. This is a quote from the Braita. Rashi sees this as a continuation of the previous statement. They got married on Tuesdays, not back to Mondays, because they have to okay the takana. Move it one day, not 2 days. It's not worth it. Tosafot sees this as a totally separate statement. It's don't get married on Mondays. Tosafot says that it's a milta banfei nafshei. It's not talking about sakana, but it's just saying, don't get married on Mondays. Better off to get married on Tuesdays, because if you want, yeah, at least there have 2 days to get ready instead of 1 day to get ready. Better off getting married on Tuesdays than on Monday. That's just a period of statement. Then, v'machmatahones mutar. If it's because of some sort of pressure, then you're mutar to get married on Mondays. Mayones. What is the pressure? What is the force that is being applied over here? Ilei mahadamran. If you'd say the same problem that we had before, right? Hatam karilei sakana. Before you called it sakana, v'achar karilei ones. Why does the bright to change the terminology for it? It doesn't make sense. If it's sakana, it's sakana. If it's onus, it's onus. Use one term to describe it. V'tu hatam nagu. Over there it says that. The minag was to change it. Hacham mutar. Here it says completely mutar. Why is there a difference in the language that is used over here? Now, Rashi over here says the nagu is not like the nagu where we have other places in Shas. Other places in Shas is that even though Beit Din won't paskin that way, nagu means that we allow the people to do it even though Beit Din doesn't paskin that way. On the other hand, Rashi says over here, nagu is rov ha'am. The majority of people did this. And if you came to Beit Din and asked us, we would tell you this. So that's what he says. But mutar is imalech ishi chidi beBeit Din yatirulo. We're not going to give us a heter, but if you come to Beit Din and ask us, we'll give you the heter. So that's the difference where Rashi is. Rashi says nagu is that the rov ha'am did it this way, and the chachamim did not object because they understood the problem, and therefore it stands water, and nobody's going to question this. Mutar means if you come and Beit Din and ask us, we'll tell you it's mutar. If you don't come and ask us, nobody's making declarations that it's mutar. So Amarova, the Amri Sartzava Balayir. It's a case where the army is showing up in the city. Well, what's the big deal if the army shows up in the city? We're not talking about necessarily in the times of the Crusaders. When the army shows up in the city, that means that everybody's in trouble, they're going to kill people. But in their day, when the army showed up in the city, they basically imposed themselves on the people of the city to host them. They basically give us bread beds, give us food, feed us, take care of us. They basically make the people of the city take care of the army. So, Echidami, Idoti v'chalif, if they came and they're going to pass by, Liakev, wait another week. Meaning that if they're only here temporarily, don't do the wedding this week, do it next week. So what the problem is, or what our assumption is, if you make the wedding, they're going to say, wow, you prepared all this food for the army, they're going to confiscate everything that you make for the wedding. So just postpone the wedding. If they hear the signs of us coming, postpone the wedding till the next week. Why do it on Monday? Just do it the next week, on Wednesday. Lo, tzricha da'ati v'kova. They are coming on Wednesday. And we know once they come up, they're staying for a long duration. They're not going away so fast. So once they get here, there's going to be no way to prepare all this food because all the food in the city is going to be used up by the army. You prepare any feast, it's going to be used by the army. You're not going to have any way to make the wedding feast. So let's jump the gun and get it done on Monday. So where it says, "Begimel mi alichnos," they're only showing up later. Why don't they get married on Tuesday? As parvadi day, begimel kahatu, because the chef of the army shows up on Tuesday. So even though he is coming Wednesday, but the chef comes on Tuesday, and when the chef shows up on Tuesday, that's when they're going to confiscate everything. So we got to get ahead of that. If he's not going to show up till later, why do we allow you to move it up a day? Because the preparation troops show up, the chef shows up earlier, and he's going to confiscate all the food. So in order to get ahead of that, we need to get on the Monday in order that we can get the chatan and kala and get everything done prior to the visitation of this asparva. Tosafot points out over here that he shouldn't be surprised by the fact that we move for the problem of Hegmon, we're only willing to move a day. But for the problem of Suda, we're willing to move it 2 days, because one is Shkiach and one is not Shkiach. As we saw before, the Hegmon, he only comes when he really thinks there's something going on and when it's worth it for him to show up. The army shows up on a regular occurrence. They come all the time. People come through and impose themselves on the city. So therefore, something that was Shkiach, they allowed you to move it for 2 days. something that wasn't shchiach, they allowed you to move it to Tuesday because that was enough of a way to get out of the problem. V'ibay deima, my machmat ones, kidetanya. What's the onus over here is like a braita. This braita is an extensive braita, has a lot of information in it, a lot of controversial information in it. It will take up the Gemara for the next numerous dapim because of all the information that's found in it, which is, it was a case where his bread is baked, the animals are shechted, and the wine is already diluted. There is now no refrigeration. Whatever is prepared is going to go to waste if we don't eat it now. And unfortunately, the father of the chatan passes away. Or the mother of the kala passes away. We take the deceased, put them in a side room. We take the chatan to the kala to the chupa. We get them married. Ubael bilat mitzvah. And they do the bilat mitzvah. They consummate the marriage. Tosafot over here explains why it's called bilat mitzvah. He quotes the pasuk that the Gemara says, ki bo alayich osayich, that the one who has biyah with a woman is osayich, makes her, and makes, that is, the corrected brit, a woman, feels a closeness and an intimacy, a deep connection to the one who has biyah with her. This is really the consummation of the marriage in the true sense. Uporesh. And then they separate. Noheg shivat yimei amishteh, and they keep sheva brachot. V'achakach noheg shiva yimei avilut. Afterwards, they keep the 7 days of avilut. In all those days, he sleeps amongst the men, and she sleeps amongst the women, because they can't be together, during Shiva Yimei Mishteh, as well as Shiva Yimei Avelut. I'll have to explain why. The kala is allowed to get decorated, have her jewelry, have her makeup, even though a Avela is not allowed to do this. But because we don't want her to meet Gane Abala, she's a newly wedded Kala, we suspend that. Just like by Yom Kippur, we suspend it for the Kala. So to over here, by Avelut, we suspend it for the Kala. Tosafot comes to the same conclusion by both of these. That must mean that these dinim are only meet the Rabbanan. Otherwise, how could you suspend it for a Kala? So to the Inui of Sicha and Rechitza must be meet the Rabbanan, because we suspend them for a Kala by Yom Kippur. And so too, these Isurim by Avelut must be the Rabbanan, because we suspend them for a Kala. That's Tosafot's conclusion. Obviously, there are other Rishonim that disagree with that, but that's how Tosafot always reads these types of dispensations. Must be Dinei Derabanan Lekula. Dinei Derabanan Lekula means that it's only a Din Derabanan. V'dafka Aviv Shel Chatan Oima Shel Kala. Only the father of the Chatan or the mother of the Kala, the Leke Inish, the Tarach Lehu. Because they are very specifically there for those parties. The mother of the Kala is the one who takes care of her, prepares her, gets her makeup. If she passed away, there's going to be no longer a mother of the Kala. And we can't recreate this situation. Same thing, the father of the groom. That's something, it's a specific position when the father can guide his son, take him down the aisle. That is not going to exist anymore. He's the one who got him there, helped him prepare the Suda. If we postpone this wedding, it's never going to happen again. But in reverse, that's not true. The father of the Kala and the mother of the Chatan don't have that status. And that's what it means. Aval ipchalo. The other way around, we would not say that because they're not as essential to the wedding going on. So it's only if it's the mother of the Kala and the father of the Chatan that we make this decision, make this dispensation over here. Now, over here, when he says, Boel bilat mitzvah, we say over here, Kodem shikavera mate. That is before the mate is buried. So what we do is, at biat mitzvah, bury the mate, sheva brachot, and then avelut. We'll see why all of these happen. But what ends up happening here, and the Reed points it out, we have some sort of an absurdity over here, which is that even though during Avelut, which according to Tosafot is Avelut to Rabbanan, it's also to have Biyah, and we won't let you have Biyah during that period of time. We say here they have to separate. They can't be together. Nevertheless, we're going to allow them to do Biyat Mitzvah when they're in Onein. Onein is a status d'oraita. You're also not allowed to have Biyah while you're in Onein. We're going to suspend the Aninut, let them do Biyah during their Aninut, again, which is a more extreme form, but during Avelut, we're not going to do it. So you come up with this absurdity, and what Tosafot says, Hashta mekilin tfei baninuto raita, me'avelutu rabbanan. We're going to be more mekil on aninuto raita, allow them to have biyah, than avelutu rabbanan. Mida dahavi, he says, we have a lot of examples of that. Nilata sandal, atifat arosh, kfiat amita. There are many niugei avelut that don't start until avelut and don't apply during aninut. You will have to wear shoes when you're in Onein. You have to only take off your shoes after stimata godol, after the burial. So you see that there, midrabanan, avelut, we make you take off your shoes. aninut, we let you wear your shoes. So Tosafot says you have a precedent for that. Now, why we have that? Tosafot views it as, okay, there, b'doraita, we override it, but the Rabbanim, we don't override it. Obviously, other Rishonim have different views of that. There might be a difference between aninut and avelut. You have to explain why or what aninut is versus avelut. Again, we're going to get into this in the Gemara in more detail, but just pointing out, this b'raita is male, all these issues. Second of all, why are they allowed to do this and postpone the avelut? It's because once they get married, it's like regal. It's like a holiday for them. Just like on a regal, if a velut or someone has a relative that dies on the regal, you wait for the velut to after the regal. So to over here, if they get married, then they put in effect their marriage, the Sheva Bracha will take place before the avelut because they're already in their regal. Since they're in their regal, if you bury the mate at that point in time, it doesn't trigger the avelut till after the Sheva Brachot are finished. Okay, so these are some of the factors or the issues that are being raised over here. Okay, we're going to stop here, 7 lines down on the top of Dalet Amud Aleph.